All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Today is episode 199. We have 200 coming up next time, and it will be me doing my massive, ridiculous ranking of every song ever released by the Gallaghers. But today we're going to be doing the part two of the interview I did with Andy Middleton, where we're going to be discussing Oasis covers. So that is the solo years, basically. And also, me and Andy discussed Fucking in the Bushes for the Oasis A to Z. So we're going to be covering that. And also, to start things off, I had a chat this morning with Kyle Dale from the Oasis Collectors Group. He'd just come back from seeing Liam Gallagher at Cardiff, which was probably the big event in the world of Oasis this week. So yeah, so it should be a fun, packed show, as always. So without any further Freddie ado, let's hear from Kyle. So welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Our good friend and revered leader of the Oasis Collectors Group, Kyle Dale. How you doing, mate?
Not a revered leader. I'm going to get some stack for that. All good, mate. All good. Good to catch up.
Yeah. How's it going? How's the... I suppose the big one is you were Liam in Cardiff this week.
That's why I sound pretty rough now, to be honest. We had an eight-hour drive there and 8-hour drive back, 4 a.m. in the car. Yeah, pretty rough, but it was well worth the trip, as it always is. It was on form as always, you know. The venue was a bit rubbish, to be honest with you, but the gig itself was good. You know, I think the atmosphere of the fans makes these sort of gigs, doesn't it? Regardless of where it is, you could play in an Aldi car park and it'd still be pretty smart.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like an Aldi car park, to be fair.
Pretty much was, yeah. I, this is the first time I didn't pay for VIP, and I thought, I'm not going to do it because I don't really know the venue, and I'm glad I didn't, because it was an absolute shambles. I could see, I think everybody that I knew that was there, lads off the OCG and a few of the mates and that, they paid for it, and every one of them was not happy at all with it, really. Mm. The VIP area was right at the kind of at the back. Yeah. You know, you're looking across the car park, and the bar, I think, was worse than the standard bar. I think they're probably going to have some complaints and issues to deal with on the VIP front. And you didn't get your nice, snazzy VIP band. It was just a bog standard, you know, B&M VIP band that was just wrapped around your wrist. So it's, it wasn't ideal. But in terms of a gig, it was belting. You know, it was on form. The crowd was ace, but I think a few people said the crowd was a bit rough in parts. But I didn't see any of that. But you know, make what you will of that. But it was a good one. You didn't go then, did you? Didn't make the trip up?
No, I didn't. In the end, I did look at it because I thought, oh, hold on, this is like the last chance probably to see him on this run. You know, this sort of close to me, and it's not too bad for me, Cardiff. It's just down the M4 or jump on the train, so it's actually not too bad at all. But no, we've got quite a lot on here, so I left it. But by the sounds of it, I mean, yeah, that's basically what I've seen online is, yeah, that the gig itself, Liam did a great job, good crowd banter and just fantastic. But then, you know, the facilities, like people saying that, like, you know, every single person got searched, there was massive queues and like the toilet, massive queues for toilets, and people actually, like, you know, no urinals, I heard, so people were like literally like just wetting themselves.
Yeah.
You know,
I think whenever you read anything online, it's always obviously blown out of proportion a bit. I wouldn't say it was as bad as that. Not every person got searched, for example. I don't think every person got searched. I didn't get searched on the way in, and neither did the lads that I was with. However, I think cheekily we just went to the VIP VIP searchlight, even though we weren't VIPs. That shows you what a shambles it was, because you could just watch straight through. But I mean, it left a lot to be desired to the organisation. But I tell you what, the charlatans were amazing.
Yeah.
Charlatans are really good. So that's what you do, right? You focus on the stuff you're there for, really. But yeah, I didn't piss my pants, so I suppose that's a different story. If I'd done that, then maybe I'd have a different opinion. The booze was expensive. The booze was expensive, and the queues were insane. But it was just leave thinking, what was the music like? You know, it was a good gig. I think there was the town centre was buzzing before it.
Yeah,
you know, all the bars, loads of bars open, and you kind of think to yourself, you know, how busy are bars these days? It was rammed, you know, and it was a Thursday night. I don't think everyone out there was going for the gig, but I say most were. It was a good night. It was well worth a trip. I think me and a few of the lads ended up in Walkabout afterwards, which was shameful. I've not been a Walkabout since I was a student in Manchester 15, 20 years ago. I don't think I'll go back again, but it was, I felt a bit out of order being in there.
You'll be
the wrong place here.
You'll be ID checked and kicked out for being over 30.
Hey, I'll tell you this for free as well. I walked in and he said, have you got any ID? I said, mate, I'm 38. He says, without ID, you're not coming in. I said, I'm over the moon to hear that. So I was across the road from the hotel. I said, I'll go back to the hotel and get my driving license. I've got ID to walk about. Brilliant.
That's brilliant, mate. That's good stuff. No, that is cool.
I'll put it on my CV. It's brilliant. I'll put it on my CV. That's great.
Any tunes, particular standouts for you from Liam Set?
Roll It Over Again for this tour. It's been amazing to hear that. Thoughts that I convey. The thoughts that make it all right. It doesn't make it all right. So all in all of my soul, you know, that was a great new addition in there. I mean, he's all the classics. I think he mixed the set list up a little bit. I think he was a bit different to the last couple. But a few people have said that, but I think I was just in a bit of an alcohol-induced haze and enjoying it. I didn't actually really notice, but I think he definitely mixed the set up a bit. I think this whole tour's been great. You know,
yeah.
Nebworth, Etihad, Glasgow. I wish I'd gone to some of the European shows looked absolutely amazing online. But
yeah.
he's smashed it this year, hasn't he? Every single gig seems to have been a belter.
Yeah. Yeah, no, amazing. I'm just having a look at the set list now, so I don't think there's anything particularly different. Hold on, let's have a look.
See, I don't think it was too different. I don't, but a few people said I think it mixed it up a little bit.
Yeah, Soul Love was in there, The River was in there. I think The River he hasn't played for a while. Slide Away he goes in and out. So I mean, there was a couple of slight, but nothing major really. He hadn't bought anything in that he'd never played before. It was just a few things that have been out and came back in. So yeah, no, cool.
Yeah.
And was there a good good meet up with members of the OCG?
Yeah, you know what I really like about this? I think I say this every time. It's like, you know, the fella stayed in my hotel room, just come over from Belgium. You know, that in itself, I'd never met the fella before. He's done a few of the signing sessions. He sends a few things in for the signing sessions. Emmanuel, lovely guy. But I didn't feel weird saying, don't worry, we'll share a room. You know, my mate's coming down from Scotland, jump in our room, I'll sort you out. Last time in the Etihad Manchester gig, there was 28 of us before we went out. And it was just like a friendly mob. You know, there's lads from Thailand, there's lads from America, Canada, all over the world. I just all sat in Manchester having a beer before a Liam gig and thought, man, this is proper. You know, it's a great little way of meeting up with people. it's kind of like the old days, you know. It's everyone gets on, everyone's all right. So yeah, it was good. It was good. I think there was about 10 of us for this one, but there was I've since seen there's probably another 15 people that were there that we just didn't bump into.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of the lads that were from that did the Nebworth film, a couple of them guys were there, and you know, the fans that were interviewed for it, but just didn't bump into people. There's a lad called Greg, I'll tell you what, strongest man in the world. He had me on his shoulders for at least four full songs. And I was like, mate, fair play to you. I've just seen a picture today that someone's taken from behind, and that's what I wanted, really. A picture from behind, me on his shoulders. And I'm just shy of 6 foot. I think he's probably a little bit shorter than me, Greg, but he's a strong man. So for that, I owe him a couple of beers for that, I think, because he's got me in some belting pictures.
He probably needs to play for his chiropractor appointments now.
He sent me a picture of his back the next day. I feel bad. Your blood vessels burst and all sorts. He looks like leading the butler from Tomb Raider. Oh, Jesus.
So, I mean, just generally on the group, how's it going? Yeah. You've got plenty of interesting stuff, Oasis and other bands as well.
Yeah, I'm branching out a little bit. I'm doing, because obviously I'd collect anything from the 90s, really, and Oasis is just the key one. But I'm branching out a little bit, and I've just become the band manager for Hurricane Number One, which is... I wasn't expecting to do. I did a bit of a project with them for a signing session, and we just got on really well. And I think one thing I feel I'm quite good at is spotting where there's a gap for making some money, where it's a win-win. So a fan gets a good thing and the band gets a good thing, and it ticks the box. So I did a few things like that for them, and then ended up becoming the band manager, which is a new career pathway following off. But yeah, the group's going great. I think we've just had a night with Jill Firmanowski. It was done. That was a real success. That was a beautiful collage print. I think there's still a few available that are on their website now, on Rock Archive. So that was a good one. I think we've got three signing sessions left in this year to finish the year off. Two in December and one on Thursday next week. So it's with Oasis band members, and the Rockfield event, actually, that's what I should mention. That's been quite a good coup. I've been asking Nick over at Rockfield for a while, you know, should we do something together there? And we finally got to the stage where there's a weekend where we can rent the studios out and do something. So we're going to effectively have an Oasis weekend at Rockfield. You know, people can play the Wonderwall guitar on the Wonderwall, and you know, listen to studio stories and Q&As with Nick and a few other people. I've got a few surprises lined up my sleeve for people when they get there, which I'm not going to say on here because it'll just ruin it. But people will leave, and they'll leave going, wow, that was well worth two nights away from the family. I mean, that's the only reason I'm doing it, actually, two nights away from the family. But it'll be good. It'll be good. Looking forward to that one. I didn't think it would be as quick, because it's about £250 a ticket, it was. Because obviously we've got to effectively rent the studio and the accommodation out for 2 days, because if they give it us cheap, you know, they're losing money on day one, because
of course,
a band would be in there for X amount. So we've taken it all out. So it's worked out around about between £250 and £300 per ticket, and 25 tickets sold out in a night. So that kind of tells me the content we're putting in for this one is quite appealing.
No, that is quality,
it'll be good,
mate.
It'll be good.
No, that's great. And I say it's fantastic. Like you said, you know, there's so many bands out there, and at a time when you're not making money on CD sales, and people have been struggling with the pandemic and everything, and there's bands, and even like decent sized bands, like you said, like Hurricane Number One, that you know that are famous bands, you know, actually,
yeah.
if you can even, like, let's say, doing ex-Oasis members and things, doing these signing sessions, it's like, well, it makes sense, doesn't it? You know, it's but it's just someone like yourself to think, hold on a minute, you know, these people want to have something special, and these guys can give them something special, and it's just making that happen.
Once you've done one or two, you get a bit of a reputation, and one tells another, and once you've got a good reference and you can say, speak to so-and-so, I did it with them a while back, it snowballs a bit. And like I say, I'm a fan, you know, I'm not a businessman, I'm a fan, and it's I'm looking at things, right, okay, so I want to get this signed by so-and-so, how can I approach that person to do this and do a signing session at the same time? And I leave with the same stuff the guys do, you know, my records get signed, my posters and prints or whatever it may be, and it ends up being quite a good win-win situation. Plus it saves people standing in the rain for 7 hours, you know, hoping yeah. they see someone through a fence or something. You know, it's just not, I can't do that. I've never done it once in my life. I must be honest, I've never ever stood outside a gig. I'm not looking down upon it, but I just know I have not got the patience to do it. So I think if I didn't do this, I wouldn't be getting nothing done myself anyway. So it's worked out quite well for it has. And like, these guys don't need money. They just appreciate the story of how many fans are getting something that they think's really special yeah. on the back of it. You know, it's a connection. It connects them again. Because like you say, some bands, if they're not releasing a new album over the last 3 years, they weren't able to tour. It's another way of connecting back with a fan base and going that route. So, yeah, I've got some good names lined up for next year. None of them are confirmed, I must add, but I've got some good, honest, early chats happening with some pretty big names. So I'm hoping next year will be quite good. And obviously, I've spoken to you before about the bar. I'll be opening a music memorabilia bar in Glasgow, hopefully in November, which will be a venue then to hold these sort of sessions. So rather than it be a sending job right now like it is, some artists, not all, because I think what appeals to a lot of artists is that there's no real effort, there's no real a full day of meet and greets. It's effectively just me driving to them, getting a lot of stuff done and leaving again. Excuse me. If I have my own venue, then I can offer different options, like launches for vinyls and books and intimate gigs, acoustic gigs, whatever it may be. So that's the big plan, to finish this year off, a couple more signing sessions and open a bar and change my career completely.
and podcast Q&As as well.
Podcast Q&As, that's it, yeah. So you get the best of the business up and do something together, and that's what we need to do. We absolutely should, though, because I think that one you did in Glasgow was belting. So I think, you know, if I've got a venue there sat waiting, we absolutely should do that one as soon as it's open.
Yeah,
I mean, you'll be at the opening party anyway, you know that, so it'll be a good thing to discuss when we're there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Glasgow, and is there plans to do more around the country? This is, I was saying to you, you're going to be Planet Hollywood of rock and roll music.
The plan is, because this is genuinely, it cannot be repeated, because people can attempt it. There are themed bars that are out there anyway. Themed bars are fine. Free bars are great. They're a lot of fun. But this is more of a music museum bar. You know, it's not a poster being put on a wall or a vinyl. It's maybe a master tape of an album that you'd love, or a white label test press and signed promo items. And I think the key thing will be that you can come in for a pint, have a look at all this stuff and spend hours seeing it. But then there'll be events that are happening, Q&A sessions and intimate gigs, and the signing sessions will happen and be hosted there. There'll be an ever rotating merch stand that will have signed memorabilia from 90s bands. I've got quite a few good contracts set up already to get regular signed material to be sent in, that's then available to purchase online and from the actual physical merch stand at the bar. I think I'm just trying to tick a few boxes with it, because I think to open up a new bar, crazy with the energy prices and everything else, it's a bit of a, especially moving from a career in finance that I've done since university, to quit that and go, let's chase the dream. it is a bit of a crazy idea to then go and try and open a bar, but it's not a bar, if that makes sense. It's more of a destination for a music fan.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way I'm trying to do it, kind of give it an all-in-one. And yeah, the overall plan will be that if it works, and it will, if it works, then what we'll do is consider number two. Naturally, I want to have something in Manchester, because that'll be, that's where I'm from. I want to go back and have a home ground to stomp on again. One in Manchester would work great. Edinburgh, I think Edinburgh would be more of a tourist trap, but Edinburgh's music scene's great as well. Glasgow's just second to none right now, though. Glasgow is just where it's at for music. You know what I mean? It's really happening there. So I think to establish yourself as the pre and post gig venue in a city like Glasgow, with the amount of venues that they've got there, and then have a small venue downstairs, oh, it's even better. So I'm there. I'm just there, just within gripping distance that this is now done. This is the third venue I've been on the table with. I've walked away from the first two for various reasons, but this one looks like it ticks the boxes. So fingers crossed, I'll have some news next week that I can actually properly announce.
Amazing, mate. Amazing. Well, when it happens, you know me, I'll be there, and the Oasis podcast listeners, I'm sure, will be desperate to get up there and check it out. But very exciting.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right, Carl. Well, look, it's been great to catch up, mate. Thank you for your review of the Liam gig. But yeah, when are you out, and have you got anything else booked in now, like gig wise?
No, I was just saying to the lad I went down with, Paul, I think that's the last one. I was at Peter Rook in Glasgow a month back maybe or something. I think that's me done now. I think that's that for the year. That's other than the Rockfield thing, you know, which isn't a gig, but it's an event that I've got something to look forward to. But I think that might be me snookered until next year. Cheeky's booking gigs. I think she just books Muse for Glasgow. I think that's like mid next year though or something. I think Suede is in March, isn't it?
Okay.
I don't think I've got anything else for this year. How about yourself?
No, that's me done. Yeah, as I said, it was just sort of you know, just thinking about doing something, like we've been talking about doing something as a, you know, because I haven't wanted to do another Q&A for a while now, as you know, when we were looking at doing this one in Manchester earlier in the year, and it just didn't happen. We were not going to cover the costs, and I sort of thought, no, look, it's, these things are a big risk when you're paying, you know, when you're booking someone for a Q&A session, you've got to pay quite a lot, you know, quite decent fee for a lot of these people, and
absolutely,
you know, and you've got, and you can't, you know, you have to sell 100 tickets to 200 tickets sometimes to break even. And it's like, you know, if it's not going to do that, then it's you end up losing a lot of money. And not just that, but it's just, you know, you don't want to have that kind of, it wasn't a great night. That's the main thing. You just want to have a great night. So, but
absolutely. We need to do something. And that's a good point, actually. We need to do something together, end up with it towards the end of the year, if possible. That would be quite good down your neck of the woods. Because I've been saying to the lads on the group for a while, I'll do a London meetup. I've done something in Manchester, done something in Glasgow. So yeah, a London meetup would be pretty good. So yeah. We definitely need to have a little look at planning something there, don't we? And I think if we've got your listeners and my mob on the group, we'll sort it out easily. I think that'll be quite good. We'll get a couple of bands on or something. That'll be worthwhile.
That will be awesome. Right, well, watch this space. There may be things afoot in that world, but
yeah.
Kyle, thank you very much, mate. And where can the kids find the Oasis Collectors group?
It's a secret you're not allowed in. No, it's just on Facebook. I think it's just answer the questions, because it just auto declines if you don't. It's on Facebook. Yeah, jump on and have a glance around. It's a friendly community, so it's well worth it for the benefits, the items, the signings, and the events. It's well worth a scan.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, they do end up being a really good group of people. Just because if they're dickheads, you kick them out.
Yeah, I must be honest. I've only ever kicked out two people, you know. So it's only been going 2 years, but I think there's only about 800 people in there, 850. But I mean, I looked at the stats. I think there's been about 2,500 declined over the years. I think it's not a snobby thing, is it? I think it's just it's a higher end kind of buyers group to describe. It's not somewhere you just post a meme of Liam having a chip butty, you know. It's a collector's group. It's a collector's group. It's to discuss items, signed items, and the most important thing, I think, is whether or not things are fake, because there's a billion fake items out there on eBay every single day. I think Record Collector magazine did an article last week on the group. It's not published yet. It'll be out in the next 4 or 5 weeks. 4 or 5 weeks, I think. But we're going over to King Tut's next week to do a few pictures. I'm going to get a few key items on the stage of King Tut's. So that'll be a smart image. I'll probably use that as the banner of the image, the banner of the group then. All these kind of key signed guitars and dartboards and drum skins and all sorts on the stage of King Tut's. That'll be some image. So yeah, that's the key thing for the group, I think. Access to knowledge and unusual items. Yeah.
Cool. All right, mate. Well, look, thank you so much for your time. It's great to catch up. And yeah, I'll speak to you soon.
Good stuff. Okay, mate. Speak to you soon. See you later. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Right, now we're into some solo years stuff. So we've got Sons of the Stage, which was BDI, one of the very first things that we heard of BDI. And I think it's brilliant. You know, I love this version. We know that Oasis loved them, that, you know, they called their 10th anniversary tour the Noise and Confusion Tour, you know, and this is, you know, Noise and Confusion, World of Twist original, which I think kind of suffers from that sort of that era production. You know, I think it's a really, really good song. But yeah, that when I heard that World of Twist one, I was like, oh, I don't really like this. You know, I think it's still a great song, but I just think that production maybe wasn't a great time for production or you know what I mean. But yeah, I love this BDI version.
Yeah, I agree. It's I think Liam actually makes an improvement on the original. It's a good homage to them because they were actually going to be called Sons of the Stage as well, weren't they?
Yeah.
The beginning of that career, Oasis. So it's a nice sort of tribute to that. Was it the B-side of Bring the Light? I think it was, wasn't it?
I think it was like officially unreleased. I think it was just that it was sort of a video or like it was, maybe it was like a download, official download or something, because it's not on Spotify. So, yeah, I don't think it was officially ever a released other than like a download or whatever. So,
and BDI played it nearly 100 times in concerts. So, you know, they love playing it.
Yeah, definitely. I think it should have been on the album. It should have been on the album. It would have been like a centerpiece of the album. Maybe it was one of those things that, you know, they didn't, you know, Oasis and the guys have never put cover versions on albums, I suppose, just because they don't want to pay money. Albums are the things that sell the most, and if you're paying a big chunk of it away, like the best example is Step Out being taken off of Morning Glory at the last minute. Oh Christ, we're going to run out again. Less than 1 minute. Okay.
I'll just finish on that saying I love the kind of Silver Machine vibe at the end of that song as well.
Yeah,
you know, the Hawkwind kind of all the mad synths and stuff like that. Pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's brilliantly produced, brilliantly played. Fantastic. Definitely a BDI version wins. All right, so that was Sons of the Stage. Next up, let's just cover off all these other BDI ones together, shall we? Because there's a few BDI ones here. We've got Blue Moon, which was a little thing they just did. I think, was it just for like a Man City shirt unveiling?
I think it was to launch the new home kit. And right. They started off with Blue Moon and then launched into The Beat Goes On straight after it.
Yeah, that was fine. You know, it's not as, not much to say. Yeah, it was quite atmospheric the way it worked. And obviously Liam enjoyed kind of crooning it. but no, nothing hugely interesting about it. It was a nice little thing for them to do.
Want a song about the Dirty Blues anyway, though.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
And then we've got some Beatles and stuff they did. I mean, I'll just run them through because, you know, comment on what you want to, really. But Across the Universe, My Sweet Lord, Gimme Shelter, and Cry Baby Cry. So all kind of Beatles, or, well, obviously you've got Lennon solo and Stones. Across the Universe, I think, is really, really good. It's one of my favourite BDI songs. I think they do a really, really good version of it. Liam, obviously, he's quoted us over the years as saying it's his favourite song. I think he sings it really, really well. And I think BDI play it really well. Whereas, yeah, My Sweet Lord and Cry Baby Cry are just very sort of straight cover versions. And Gimme Shelter is a live one, isn't it? With a bit more of a belt to it. But yeah, but pretty straight. And it's nice to hear Liam sing it. But yeah, what do you reckon?
Yeah. I love the Across the Universe cover. I think I like the sort of choral sound background. I know that I think I've heard you mention before, James, that you're not a fan of that sound, like on Stand on the Shoulder of Giants.
Yeah,
that kind of P.P. Arnold sort of backing singing. I love that. Yeah. Like, going back to sort of Nick Drake's music when P.P. Arnold sang on a couple of his songs. I love that sound, and you get that in Across the Universe, I think. And I like the bit where it kind of breaks down and the drums go quiet. And then he says, Jai Guru, David. Mm. And then the drums kick in, and it's just like, it's pretty uplifting. It's not as good as the original, but it's a fantastic cover. My Sweet Lord, I think, just goes on a bit. That was for the Charlatans tribute concert, wasn't it? For the drummer who died.
Yeah.
It's a solid cover, but it just drags a bit near the end. Gimme Shelter, the versions I've heard, Liam's vocals sound a bit tired on them. You know, it was when he was having his issues with his throat. He had in the sort of 2013, 2014, his voice was pretty poor then, probably doing too much drinking and smoking. Didn't look after himself.
Sure.
Cry Baby Cry, decent cover. Really like it. But all good.
Yeah, it's just the Cry Baby Cry is just a little radio session, isn't it? It's a nice, nice version, but yeah.
Cry baby cry, make your mother sigh. She's old enough to know better. King of Marigold was in the kitchen cooking breakfast for the queen. The queen was in the parlor playing piano for the children of the king. Cry, baby, cry, make your mother sigh. She's old enough to know better.
But I had all of the originals as being the best on all them four.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Across the Universe is a close one. And I suppose with the Beatles, you haven't got a definitive version of Across the Universe. There's the World Wildlife Fund version. There's the Let It Be album version. There's a third one as well. Can't think off the top of my head. Maybe there's a B-side or something. But, yeah, there is three sort of slightly different versions of it. But, yeah. Yeah, but no, I do really love the BDI version, but I could, you know, I can't I can't yeah. quite bring myself to go, no, BDI's version is better than the Beatles.
Yeah, probably the same as that guy with the Neil Young quote. Yeah, you know, if you're, we're such big Beatles fans, it's hard to.
Yeah, how can you?
It is difficult.
How can you? Yeah. And then we go into, well, let's just talk about the one Liam one that he's done solo, and then you've got three Noel ones just to cover off. So the one Liam one he's done solo is a very interesting one, which is Natural Mystic, the Bob Marley song. Bold choice of Liam to cover, you know, to cover a Bob Marley song and a reggae song, because he's not a reggae singer. He did it, you know, a few radio performances and things. And I think he does a decent version of it, and it's fine, but I think it was a bit of a failed experiment for me. I think the Bob Marley version is significantly better. I don't think this is that great.
Yeah, I think he must be discovering his sort of reggae side a bit lately, Liam. There's a song on his new album, isn't there, with a...
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I can't remember the name of it. Escapes, but,
yeah. I'm Free, it is, yeah.
He's got some sort of dub in it and stuff like that, and he's always shouting Rasta on Twitter and stuff like that, isn't he? So, yeah. It reminds us a bit, sort of the Bob Marley original, reminds us a bit of She's Not There by the Zombies.
Oh, okay.
Similar kind of sound. Again, want to listen side by side and have a see what you think. But yeah, I think he's quite a spiritual person, isn't he, Liam? I don't think he's particularly religious, but because it's quite a religious lyric to this song, but he comes across as quite a spiritual person. So
yeah.
I think he's just trying to exercise that side of it.
I can understand that he's probably heard it and he loves the song. It means a lot to him. He goes, "Oh, I'll do a version of that." And it's like, yeah, you can't really capture it. I tell you what, I'd like to hear him do though would be Redemption Song. I think Liam could do a good version of that because that's less reggae. You know, that's pretty much just like a straight acoustic song, isn't it?
The problem with that is you'd have to fake a bit of a Jamaican accent to make it sound. You know, it's a bit too Jamaican, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I have no fear, it when he goes like, "I have no fear for atomic energy." I've heard enough white guys play that in living rooms over the years. Yeah. But right. I don't
like Sting or someone like that.
God. I hate Sting. I know, like, I'm sorry, I don't know if you're a big Sting fan being from the North East.
No.
But like, I always hated that. He did a... It was a Brit Awards a few years ago, and he got like the lifetime achievement. And he just like got up onto stage, and just I think his speech was, "Music is its own reward." And he whipped off his top and then started like playing his crappy, you know, "Every Breath You Take" or something. I'm just like, "Oh, you prick!" Oh God, I've never liked Sting. I think a few Police songs are good, but what a prick that guy is anyway.
Absolutely.
Music is its own reward. Off with the top, there's rock.
Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. No matter ourselves can free our mind. I've no fear for atomic energy, cause none of them can stop the time.
All right, we've got three Noel songs from his from the last few years. So, and this is sort of like him. So All You Need Is Love was a big one that they would sort of finish the show with, which was a fine version. I think what I really like about it is the way that it goes into Love Life by the Ruttles, which is just brilliant. I love that. And it shows that he likes the Ruttles, and, he didn't make a fuss of it. He just did it, which is just so cool. And such a nice little nod to the Ruttles, who I absolutely love. A fine version, a good version, a fun way to close out the show, but not a patch on the Oasis original for me.
It's almost like you've written my comments, because I've got exactly the same type of thing written down. it's a good way to end your show. It's celebratory. I'm not a big fan of either the original or Noel's, if I'm perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. It's like a song I would skip by the Beatles. I think when he played it in concert, I saw him on that tour in 2018, and he used to release loads of balloons at the massive balls and balloons from the ceiling. So I was looking forward to that at the Newcastle Arena show, and he didn't do it there. So I was like, good.
Where's the balls?
Where's the balls, you tight bastard?
Oh, you do it for London, not for Newcastle.
We probably all end up necking them. That's probably why he didn't.
Yeah, that's probably it, isn't it? Yeah. Cool. All right. And then the two he's done recently, a couple of Dylan covers, but Dylan covers where the most famous version isn't by Dylan. So he did for the Sky Arts show, he did Mighty Quinn, or Quinn the Eskimo, most made famous by Manfred Mann, but obviously it's a Dylan song. And then You Ain't Going Nowhere, which is a Dylan song, but then most famously done by the Byrds. So, yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, not a big fan of Dylan. I think I've already put that on the Discord group before. But it's pretty tuneful, Mighty Quinn. I like the brass that he's got going on in there, but he doesn't have the flute, which I think's a bit of a signature thing for that song. There's bits of it that in the original that remind us of I've Got a Feeling by the Beatles. You know, everybody has a good year. That Lennon refrain at the end, so... just something I picked up, when I was sort of reviewing these. But I think the original is probably the best version, although I'm not a massive fan of either, if I'm perfectly honest.
Everyone's been building ships and boats. Some are putting up monuments, some are jotting down notes. Everybody's living in despair, every girl and boy. But when Queen the Eskimo gets here, everybody gonna jump for joy. Come on without, come on within. You've not seen nothing like the Mighty Queen. Everybody had a hard year, everybody had a good time, everybody had a wet dream, everybody saw the sunshine. Oh yeah,
oh yeah,
oh yeah.
Sure.
It's like something we would have probably sang at school, like in music or something like that.
Yeah. And what about the You Ain't Going Nowhere?
Yeah, it's a nice jolly cover. I've written. I've got no opinion on it, to be honest. I think both songs are pretty. I bet you're wishing you hadn't asked us on now. I've got no opinion on this.
You've got to have an opinion, really... Marvin.
Yeah.
No. I think that's often the problem with a lot of these, isn't it? It's like, well, yeah, I mean, when he's done something different or changed it around or whatever. I think it's interesting. He's obviously been maybe in lockdown. Maybe he's on a bit of a Dylan fix, because these are not... I mean, Mighty Quinn's obviously a famous song from the Manfred Mann version, but... You know, You Ain't Going Nowhere. I'm like, well, how would he have listened to the Birds, or would he have been listening to the, because it's from like Dylan's basement tapes. So,
yeah,
you know, he's normally a greatest hits boy, you know, is Noel. And that sort of tends to be what he tends to focus on. So he's obviously had, you know, on a bit of a Dylan tip and dug into it a little bit more. But yeah, I thought it was interesting, like two, you know, covers and both Dylan songs.
Yeah, I know, so, when he's talked about Dylan a little bit on the Matt Morgan podcast, and I think he does a lot of sound check Dylan songs in his sound checks, because there was a one that he did called Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. Evidence of song checking that in 2011, but I think it's just, you know, he's probably something he plays at home on his own guitar and then does it in sound check, and then he's thought, I'm going to commit these to a recording of some sort, and that's where these have came out, you know.
Sure. And just talking about Bob Dylan briefly, I've never seen Bob Dylan live, and I've heard, I really love Bob Dylan, but like the, you know, 60s to early 70s Dylan, beyond that, I don't really listen to any of it. So, yeah, so I'm a big fan of him. I've heard he's pretty crap live, like, and that he'll go into just like random songs and his band doesn't know what song he's playing, and he's just pretty awful. They announced a tour this week, the tickets went on sale this week. And my wife's like, well, look, do you want to go? And I thought, well, I should see him. I mean, he's coming to Oxford, you know, that's so, you know, it's not even like if you had to go to Wembley Arena to see him or the O2 or something. I'm like, wow, I could literally see him in Oxford. That would be amazing. I mean, he's crap live, apparently. So would I want to see him, though? And so I was like, all right, well, look, let's see how much tickets are. If they're like up to 60 quid, I'll go. And they were 90 quid. I'm like, fuck, wow. 90 quid to probably have a dreadful show.
The thing is, though, he could be the next guy trending on Twitter. You just don't know how, you know, with his age. So it's like, I did the same with Lou Reed. I went to see him in Newcastle probably a year or two before he passed away. And it was dreadful. Oh, but yeah. I just thought, I love the Velvet Underground. I love a lot of his solo stuff, particularly like the Berlin album and that. And so I went and I put up with it. But at least I can say I've seen Lou Reed live. So I think you should go save up the extra pennies and get yourself away.
No, I'm not going to go. I mean, I imagine it's sold out now already. I think it was like, oh, yeah, tickets go on sale at 10. Do you want to get how much? 90. No.
It is a lot, that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, I'd go in, I'd probably pay more. I'd probably pay that if it was like a Q&A.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That would be a better, more interesting, I think, than hearing him like, you know, like, and you don't even know what song he's singing, but... anyway, there we go.
He sold the rights to his music recently, didn't he? For
like
$200 million or something.
That's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, yeah. So the only other one, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, which was just a bit of a sound check one. Yeah, so that's, fine. And then the last one was Bless You, the Liam version of the John Lennon track that he released recently. This was interesting. I talked about it on the podcast, but that it had been an Andrew Wyatt thing he put out on Instagram, but Andrew did the majority of the vocal and then Liam just jumped into that, like the middle eight sort of element. Whereas then he's obviously just gone and recorded vocals and all of it, and now it's been put out as Liam Gallagher's song. Officially, it's, you know, come out now as a, it was a bonus track on the vinyl, and then now it's come out as the Diamond in the Dark, a track on the EP for Diamond in the Dark. Which is like, well, what does that mean? Because it's not been released as a vinyl EP. So it's just where it lives on Spotify. But anyway, yeah. Stupid, isn't it? But and I really love this version. I think it's actually, it is different to the Lennon original, but there's sort of a lot of similarities to them both. I think Liam's vocal is excellent. And it's one that passed me by. I have listened to Walls and Bridges over the years. It's not one I go back to. And this track is like, wow, that's Bob. That's John Lennon, is it? And when you go back, it's just like, oh wow, that was a real sort of slightly different thing for Lennon to do at the time. And I really like both versions, but I probably just naturally favour John Lennon.
I mean, how good is the bass on the Liam version? I love that plodding, soulful bass. It's like, it's so nice. It's like so cool to listen to. But out of all the songs on that album, I wish he'd pick Number 9 Dream. That's my favourite song on that album, Number 9 Dream.
Yeah.
Probably my favourite Lennon solo song, even above Imagine. I just love that song. And I would love to have heard Liam do that. But his version of Bless You, it's really good. And it's kind of a bit sort of left field as well. It's a bit of a deep cut, isn't it? It's not like a typical Lennon song that he would, it wasn't like an obvious choice, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably because it's Andrew Wyatt who's done it, you know? Yeah. And, oh, Liam, would you mind doing this vocal for me? And he's picked it out because, like, quite a cool, soulful, you know, the production is brilliant, isn't it? Like, I see your bass line, but just everything about it, it's really lush. And it's really, really cool.
I think Lennon wrote it at the time when he was split up from Yoko for his Lost Weekend
period, where
he was with his secretary for 18 months or something. So he was pining for Yoko.
Was it May? Her name's May.
May Pang or something.
May Pang. Pang. So I was going to say it's not May Young, is it? Hey, May Young. All right, so we're going to talk about our latest on the Oasis A to Z now, Fucking in the Bushes, which, as we know, is the opening track from the Standing on the Shoulder of Giants album. And, it's a bit of a monster. What do you think of it?
Yeah, it's a proper, like, sort of Led Zepp style. Well, I mean, it blows you away, doesn't it? It's been used so many times by not only Oasis and Liam, but, like, you know, sporting stars, boxing matches and stuff like that, where they use it as opening, like the walk-on music and things like that. It's just such an aggressive, it gets your heart pounding and gets you jigged up. I love it. Again, kind of, I love the choral stuff that's in it, the P.P. Arnold. I think P.P. Arnold actually does the choral stuff on it, doesn't she?
Yeah, it's P.P. Arnold and Denise Lewis, I think.
Yeah, and again, it's like, sort of the Nick Drake, P.P. Arnold worked with Nick Drake back in the 70s as well. I love that kind of that sounds all the way through Outstand and the Shoulder of Giants, isn't it? So
yeah,
I really like that. And I love the sample from that Message to Love, the Isle of Wight film, 1970, you know. You've got to listen pretty close to pick out all of it, but yeah, there's some good some quite funny stuff on there. And if you can't hear it on the recorded version, you can get the lyrics up on the internet, so you can see what the samples are.
They're brilliant. They're worth watching on YouTube. People have dug them out, and you know, you can Google them and find them pretty easy. But the old lady that's like, "Ban life, nice, beautiful. I'm all for it." She's a proper character when you see her on the thing.
I love it. Room for everybody here. Yes, all are welcome. Yes, indeed. I love them. Fun, nice, life, youth, beautiful.
But yeah, if people don't know, it's the these samples were all taken. Yeah, what is it? Message to Love, the Isle of Wight film, and it's brilliant. But yeah, the fact that the guy gets on stage, that they were, I mean, well, you can hear what he's doing. He's sort of, as they get on stage, that people were wrecking the place, you know, and he's just really pissed off at them. "We put this festival on, you bastards," with a lot of love. And, you know, and it's just so great, but the passion of which he delivers it. And then "you go to hell." It's just so brilliantly edited there, isn't it? It's such a great job. If you're going to use samples like that, you know, and they had started kind of mixing up the sound a little bit at this point. You know, there's that brief pick up the bass and go let it out. And yeah. And so this was like their kind of integrating hip hop and stuff into their sound. It didn't go a huge amount further than this, but yeah, I think it's they work fantastically well.
"We put this festival on, you bastards, with a lot of love. We work for 1 year for you pigs. And you want to break our walls down? And you want to destroy it? Well, you go to hell."
Yeah, it was kind of a good midlife crisis that Oasis were having at the time that this came out of it. You know, a lot was happening with the band then, wasn't it? Like Bonehead and Gwigs had just left.
Yeah,
they got a new cover designer in, new producer Mark Stent in. You know, it was all change, wasn't it? And for them to, I think Stand on the Shoulder is probably a pretty underrated album when you consider what they were going through at the time. And Noel's pretty much dismissed it like he dismissed Be Here Now as well. And I think that's quite sad because there's some good stuff on there. I mean, Strange Boys guitar and on Fucking in the Bushes is pretty immense. I mean, he makes that whole song basically, doesn't he, with the keys and the guitar.
He's an unsung hero of this era. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I asked the people of Twitter what they thought. 5 out of 5 got 47%, 4 got 35, 3 got 15, and 2 got 3%. So it's pretty strong. It's not like the number one, but it's right up there. A lot of 5 out of 5s, which was, I found, quite surprising. Let's see what some people said. Dan Best said 47% for 5 out of 5. I wouldn't go that far. 3.5 for me. No, Dan, you're not allowed to do 0.5s, as we've talked about. That ruins my calculations. AMC Ty says it would have been better if Liam sang it, guy in bucket hat. very good. DD says, from Australia, "You know what's coming when you hear it. It's a kick the door down, in your face, punk rock tune. Love the drum loop, bass, guitar, riff, the lot. Such a class opener. Gets the excitement running through you, especially at a gig. Definite 5. Yeah. It's great with Liam shows, the way he uses it. You know, you would have thought actually maybe he would go back to using a Swamp Song or might use something else, but no, he uses this, which I think is great.
We put
Kaz, BH9OZNZ, great gig opener, a solid four. Matt, M Fortet, can't think of another instrumental by any other vocal-led band that even comes close to this. The genius of NG here is that with the track, he links Oasis with the 1970 Isle of Wight Festival and greats like Hendrix, The Who, ELMP, The Doors. This track binds Oasis in that rock folklore. Yeah, I suppose so. It kind of links, you know, it shows they know their history and stuff, don't they? Yeah. And the fact that it has got that Led Zepp kind of feel to it. Dennis Zylstra, a giant step forward after Be Here Now. It's rocking, funky and psychedelic, and the production on it is amazing. David Walker, who's our mate who makes good music, it's an amazing instrumental. The guitar riff is catchy. The drums and the start make it the perfect intro for a live show. Used to love how everyone went mad at Oasis gigs when the beat kicked in. Perfect way to kick it off. Love it. Ali Stewart says, probably the finest instrumental ever written. Brilliant album opener and even better walk-on music at gigs. Elevates it to 4 out of 5 for me, which is surely the maximum score available for a track with no vocals. Grandpa Batman, an interesting wake-up call to the new post-Bone Gwig's Oasis 2.0. I love how it set the mood for live shows. Just wish it had actually been performed live too. Solid 3 since No Vox by either Gallagher. Yes, yeah, so they didn't perform it live. It was always only on tape. What do you think? Do you think it would have been better if they actually played it?
I don't know if they could have, because Strange Boy did it, didn't he? So, you know, it would have probably sounded different. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it completely suits being on tape for them to walk onto that. It's, you know, and then kick into whatever they were going to play as the first song, you know.
Fair enough. Richard Bowes, I don't know who that is, but even in his darkest writing hours, Noel was still able to write the perfect walk-on music. Always thought this was his crack at writing Breathe by The Prodigy. Okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Hobbs, absolute belter, pure rock and roll excitement. When you hear this, love the sample, pays homage to the Isle of Wight Festival. Me personally, it means two things. I'm about to be covered in piss and Oasis are about to take to the stage. In summary, beautiful, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Very good.
You see, the whole thing is, if you have a festival with all the stops pulled out, kids running about naked, fucking in the bushes, and doing every damn thing that they feel inclined to do.
Jessica Reese, this is a track that is both very serious and very funny. The only track with a swear word in it, I believe, well, with a swear word in the title, I think.
Yeah.
There's loads that have got swear words. I know that because when I was in the band with Joel, who's been on the podcast a load of times, when we were kids, and you know, we said, oh, go out, and my, you know, mum would say, oh, go and play us a song then. You could see Joel's Rolodex brain just go through to songs that had swear words in them. And I'm like, you know, and he starts
Married with Hello. Children or something.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, thanks. Thanks, Joel. Okay. They saved that for a really good instrumental with a hilarious rant over the top. Lovely. I'd be interested to know how much influence Liam had over it, if any. Who's this? Supernova Dragon says, I've always thought this was very meh and shouldn't have featured on the album. I gave it a 3, but that's being generous. Wow. Okay. Well, that's a good point for this question, which is, you know, we always say, well, should it have been on the album? Should it have been a B-side? Should it have been a single? What do you think?
I think it's a perfect opener for the album.
Yeah.
And then it just goes nicely in the go, let it out. I think it sits perfectly where it is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's spot on. Yeah, I mean, people have said there that, well, is it a bit sort of basic, you know, but I don't think it is. I think if it was just that original riff, if that was all it is, then fine, it would have been. But the fact it goes through a couple of different stages,
yeah,
and having the samples on it as well, I think is a really, really great song. Who else we got? Sean McLaughlin, absolutely brilliant opening to album and gigs. Still think Swamp Song is better though. What do you reckon? Swamp Song versus Bushes?
Nah, Bushes all day for me.
Fair enough.
Swamp Song's the one that I would skip on. What's the story?
Oh yeah. on both of them.
Yeah.
Jay Marriott 8 says, Alar, you want to write some words for that? So, yeah. So, no, there we go. Brilliant. All right. Well, Andy, thank you very much. Been a pretty epic session, but much appreciated. And, yeah, where can the kids find you online?
Just on Twitter. That's the only sort of presence I have online. I mean, I do put stuff on YouTube now and again, like my dreadful unboxing of the Noel Gallagher J150, where I almost wreck a £4,000 guitar. But, yeah, it's just Middleton Andy on Twitter. So, yeah, you'll see us on there.
Wonderful, mate. And are you going as a Newcastle lad? Are you excited about? I saw Sam Fender's playing St James's Park. Is that going to be a destination for yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to try and get tickets, but I'm more concentrating on getting me Cooler Shaker tickets because they come on sale tomorrow as well.
Oh, so, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Are they coming to Newcastle?
Yeah, they're playing the Whelan Brewery in Newcastle in January. So, That'd be a great gig. But I would like to see Sam Fender, but I know that they did a pre-sale yesterday, I think, and it just sold out straight away. So I think it'll be difficult to get tickets, but, you know, give it a try.
All right, mate. Well, thank you very much for your time. And, yeah, we'll see you again.
Yep. Cheers, James. Thank you.
So thank you very much to Andy. Yeah, good fun. Good to break down both the covers and also Fucking in the Bushes. So if you guys have any thoughts on that tune or any of the other ones we've discussed recently, then do let me know. And if you have any particular strong views on the next song on the A to Z, which is Full On, then do feel free to get in touch. Right, here we also are going to have another bit from Andy. This is a little interview he did with a fan from Venezuela.
So
with Arlene here, who's from Venezuela.
Yes, yeah? I'm from Venezuela, yes.
And she has an experience of sort of seeing Oasis in 2009.
Yeah, so they went to my university in 2009 in Venezuela, and then they play in this amazing venue, so it's like all like very green, very like all natural resources and stuff in Venezuela. So it was in a university, like in a camp, as in football size, and they play there, and it was like I think it was sold out, so everyone went to the concert. I didn't go myself personally, but I was able to like hear all of like them playing during like all the repertoire, and it was amazing. It was amazing to know like a band that was from abroad, from another country, was actually coming to our country, especially during that time where no one wanted to go to Venezuela, and they chose to go to like our country. So yeah, it was an amazing experience to be able to host an international band that we knew is so big. Like, they had so many well-known songs, and it was amazing to host them in Venezuela, especially in my university. So that was an amazing experience.
So what would you say that your favorite sort of Oasis song is, or favorite album or memory or anything like that?
I'm not sure about like the name of the song, but it's like, do you want me to sing it?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe you're gonna be the one that saves me. And after all, exactly.
Beautiful.
That's my favorite song, Oasis. And actually, I have like many like memories about it. Like not in Venezuela. Like I went to Azerbaijan for one trip with my sisters, and it was like people from all over the world, like Germany, like England, us from Venezuela, Macedonia. And we were singing that song in one pub. Like, it's a song like in Azerbaijan. It's well known. No, actually, like, it was one of the best memories ever. Like, whenever I see that video of like us playing and singing that song, it's amazing. So I think Oasis is something that transcends like any barriers in every country.
Excuse me. Hi guys, welcome to Venezuela. Why did you choose this country to perform?
Why? Because it chooses me, man.
Yes, exactly.
And how do you feel?
I feel all right, man. I'm buzzing. How do you feel?
Your album has sold out 1.8 million copies. How do you feel about that?
Bit disappointed, man. I thought we'd have sold 20 million copies.
Liam, which country did you choose for your world tour?
Every country, man.
Every country?
Every country. Got to go everywhere.
And which are the new projects? Which one are your new projects for the future?
No, every country's cool.
Do you have any new projects and any new albums you want to...
No new albums, clothes. Basically clothes, making clothes now. That's what we're going to do.
What kind of clothes?
Top clothes.
Casual clothes?
Clothes like this, man.
Okay, thank you.
What's your name?
Pleasure.
What's your
pleasure to meet you.
And you, sweetheart.
Can you say hi to La Bomba?
Who's La Bomba?
To the camera.
La Bomba?
La Bomba. Hi, hi, hi.
All right, La Bomba.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening to the Oasis podcast. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. Thank you to Kyle for his time today, and to Andy, of course. If you'd like to give your thoughts on Fucking in the Bushes or anything else we've talked about, then do feel free to get in touch on email, oasispod@gmail.com. And if anyone is from other countries, you know, I'm always fascinated to hear how Oasis went down in those countries. You know, it's always fascinating for me to hear that. I'd love to speak to someone from like Brazil or China or Argentina, something like that. So if you're from one of those places and you have any unique story, do feel free to get in touch. All right, I think that'll do it then. Thanks again for listening. Do follow on social media, and we'll see you next time for episode 200. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.